Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work, enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikaitis.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for episode 566 with Mike Michalowicz. Mike is sharing what to fix next so you can better focus, you can stop the firefighting, and get more good, solid stuff done that matters. You'll learn, one, how to identify what you need to fix next. Two, a crucial question you're forgetting to ask. And three, the tremendous energy unleashed by providing the context for goals. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to albums we've referenced, expand the episode notes or show description in your podcast app player or visit awesomeatyourjob.com/EPEP566 and you'll find them that away with handy clickable links on our website. Now here's Mike's story. Mike Michalowicz is the entrepreneur behind three multi-million dollar companies and is the author of Profit First, Clockwork, The Pumpkin Plan, and his newest book, Fix This Next. Make the vital change that will level up your business. Mike is a former small business columnist for the Wall Street Journal and regularly travels the globe as an entrepreneurial advocate. Big thanks to Mike for sharing his wisdom with us, and big thanks to our sponsors. Check them out. One sponsor to check out is Storyworth, who's offering $10 off your first purchase at storyworth.com/awesome. Whenever I'm thinking about meaningful Mother's Day gifts, Storyworth leaps to mind. Storyworth is an online service that makes it fun and easy to write an entire book of life memories and preserve them for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a single life-related question that you pick from their collection, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done? I have personally loved their prompts so much that I have refreshed their questions page many times. All they have to do is reply with their story. After a year, Storyworth compiles those stories, memories, and even photos into a beautiful hardcover book to provide a valued keepsake. Families love Storyworth so much, they've got 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot with millions of stories preserved. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. And right now, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/awesome. That's storyworth.com/awesome for $10 off your first purchase. Now, here's Mike. Mike, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Pete, it's my joy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited. I've really enjoyed your audiobooks.
Thanks.
And you're kind of a goofball, which I am too. So I think feel free to cut loose here. It's interesting. We had another guest, Simon Sinek, who dubbed you as a top contender for the patron saint of entrepreneurs.
Unbelievable.
Which is high praise. And
that's unbelievable.
I'm familiar with some stories of saints, and often they include heroically facing adversity. And one of my favorite stories from you involves a tough night at dinner and some people coming to your aid. Can you share that with us to frame up what you're all about?
Yeah. You know, so I started my entrepreneurial journey very early in life, right after college, and had a couple early wins under my belt. I sold my first tech company. I was in computer technology. First tech company was a private equity exit. My second company was a Fortune 500 acquired us. And I'm like, I am hot shit. I know everything. Which, by the way, seems like to be the impetus or the start of the downfall for many a person when we believe we know all. And I was just full of arrogance and ignorance. Well, I started a third business that I leave off my CV conveniently as an angel investor. And I sucked at it. I had no idea what I was doing. I just thought, hey, I'm so smart. I know everything about business. As long as I'm here, we're making money. I started 10 companies. And within a mere 6 months, all of them were out of business. I was paying bills for businesses that didn't even exist anymore. And also blew money on just arrogance. The big house, I got a place in Hawaii for our sabbatical, our family sabbatical. I just blew money on the cars and all stuff. And it took me 2 years. I got a call from my accountant. He said, Mike, you've hit rock bottom. I think you should declare personal bankruptcy. Something I actually didn't do. I felt I was responsible. But as a consequence, I had to lose my possessions. We got rid of our house. We lost our house 30 days later, cars, everything. Well, I came home the night I heard this from my accountant and had to face my family because I hadn't been telling them the truth of the struggles. I really did think, even though my bank account was dwindling at a exponential rate, that somehow someone would come in and save the day and acquire this mess I had created. But nothing happened. And I came home to my family and told them, we're done. We lost it all. And I was sobbing. I was devastated. And I had to face my wife and say, I'm sorry, we're losing the house and we're losing our cars and we're losing our possessions. And my daughter was 9 years old at the time. And she's sitting there. And I said, I'm so sorry, but I can't afford for you to go to horseback riding lessons. It was like $25 for a group session. And she stood up and just ran away. Everyone was crying and she ran away. I thought she was running away from me. She ran away to her bedroom to grab her piggy bank. And she ran back down to me as fast as she could. And she says, Daddy, since you can't provide for us, please use my money to support us. And if I think I'm getting chills thinking about it, I've said that story so many times and still it's devastating. I'm so ashamed of who I was and the arrogance and the ignorance. And that I forced my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter, to save me. Well, that triggered years of struggle for me to reconcile that. I actually went through depression. I drank and ultimately discovered that moment actually has become a source of light, a seedling for me to realize I didn't know much about entrepreneurship, that I had to fix these things. And that became the spark for becoming an author. I write my business books to solve problems, not only for others, but for my own problems, my own misunderstandings around business, and simplify the journey and hopefully prevent others from experiencing the fallacies and the arrogance and ignorance that I did.
Mm. Well, that is powerful. And thank you for sharing that again with our audience here.
My joy.
So you are renowned as an author for entrepreneurs and small business owners. And, you know, in chatting with your publicity folks, it's like, well, I love Mike's flavor, but we've got a little bit of a different audience here, which is more so professionals, kind of in the middle of the hierarchy as opposed to the owners.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great sort of tools and frameworks and approaches that are totally applicable in your next opus here, Fix This Next. So can you orient us a little bit in terms of what's the book about and why is it helpful?
Yeah. So what I did is I wanted to figure out, is there a common DNA or structure for businesses? And I'm convinced I found it. And it's something that we all can use regardless of our title or role. We all have a responsibility for the health of the business because collectively it moves us all together. So what I did was I wanted to see if there was a common DNA. And I first started looking at humanity as ourselves, me, you, everyone listening in. If you look at the essence of who we are, we're identical. If you peel back the stuff we judge, the skin, the height, male, female, and we look at the essence of it, the makeup is basically the same. Like if I was having a heart attack, the doctor wouldn't say to me, where's your heart? Do you keep it in your foot? Or, you know, mm-hmm. Is it in your ear? No, the heart's in the same place for all of humanity. So they know how to operate on us. Well, the same is true for business. If we peel back the skin of the business, a manufacturer versus a professional services company or vice versa, we will find there's a common structure. That's what I call the business hierarchy of needs. The business hierarchy of needs, I translated from Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which defines human needs. So just as a quick session on Maslow. Maslow is studying human needs and discovered and argues that all of us have base physiological needs. We need to breathe air, drink water, eat food. And if those needs aren't being satisfied, then we can't survive. But once those are satisfied, we go to the next level, which is safety needs. We need protection from the elements or harm. Once that's satisfied, we move on to belonging, the need for relationships and so forth. And we keep on climbing up ultimately to self-actualization. But if at any time a base level need is not satisfied, say you and I are having this conversation, we consider it an intellectual conversation, we consider it as part of self-actualization. If I start choking on the food I'm eating, well, all of a sudden my Maslow hierarchy brings me right down to the physiological need of getting that out of my throat. Well, our business has a hierarchy of needs too. Real quickly, they are sales. That's the foundation. That's the creation of oxygen for business. Profit, the creation of stability for an organization. Without it, a business can't sustain. Order, the creation of efficiency, consistency. Then there's impact, which is the creation of transformation. It's where we're of service to our clients beyond the transaction, beyond the commodity. And then the highest level is legacy, which is the creation of permanence, where there's no dependency on the people who are running the operation. The company is designed for its continued service and that others can come and go, but the business lives on permanently. The difference between Maslow's hierarchy and the business hierarchy, while they're very similar, is one great distinction. Maslow talks about human needs and how we are biologically, neurologically wired into our needs. If you and I, Peter, are walking down a dark alley and we get like the, the creeps, that someone's going to kill us, what will we do? We will hopefully turn around and walk out. And we should, because our senses, sight, smell, touch, those senses are triggering, there's danger here. But the thing is, we as business professionals are not neurologically wired into our business. We say we trust our gut, and you know, I think this is what we got to do. I can feel it. But really, we need the empirical data to evaluate exactly what the true need is in our business, focus on that, resolve that, and then move on to the next need, resolve that, and so forth, and continue the progress forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, certainly. And so then let's talk about the particulars for how that can be transformational for folks. I'd love to hear some tales about some professionals, some organizations who applied some of this rigor to great effect.
Yeah. So I'll share a coffee or a shop that does this, and the team rallied around it. You know, with what's going on as we're recording this with the economic crisis, COVID, there's companies responding. And let's evaluate the business hierarchy of needs just a little bit further. So the business hierarchy of needs, the five levels, the foundational need is sales. Now again, sales is the creation of cash. If your product, your service, your company, your division does not have consistent sales, it is not bringing oxygen into that division. So we need to address that first. And you address it to the adequate level of supporting profit. And that's actually the simple base question. Do I have enough sales to support profitability? If I don't, we have a sales issue. If we do have enough sales to support profit but are not profitable, we actually have a profit issue. Do we have enough margin? Are we controlling the debt we have and so forth? Once profit is addressed, we ask ourselves, is it adequate to support the layer above it, which is order, efficiency? Now, one argument I want to make here is that we're not ignoring efficiency. You know, you have to have some order and efficiencies in our sales process when we're doing that. You have to have some system for profitability. I'm just saying this is when it becomes your concentrated effort. You know, you don't ignore sales when you're working on order. You continue it, but they must work in relation. When you get to the order level, this is where it becomes our concentration to resolve efficiency. And I'll talk about, actually, let me start off with this story because I think it's the best. This is Ole Miss. Ole Miss, the University of Mississippi, is in the SEC conference. I mean, talk about an organization, thousands and thousands, actually, I think tens of thousands of employees, a massive organization. They implemented the business hierarchy of needs in their own form. They did this before I wrote the book, but they were following this process inherently. And what they noticed back in, I believe it was early 2000s, that the school had noticeably less applicants than any of the other SEC schools. So the first thing we do is when we have a problem, we ask ourselves, where does it reside in this hierarchy? Well, applications is similar as prospects. Mm-hmm. They had less prospects, and that's a sales level need. So the company identified, okay, we have a need in the sales level, the most foundational level of the business hierarchy. Then they asked, what's the triggers behind it? And they went through a process called OMEN. I write about it in the Fix This Next book, but OMEN stands for Objective, Measurement, Evaluation, Frequency, Nurture. It simply means identify what the problem is, measure the process, regularly revisit it, and tweak and change things as we move along, nurture. They identify this challenge of not getting enough prospects, and they start interviewing prospects of why they aren't signing up. And they find that the primary reason is the campus ain't so pretty. One of the biggest determining factors of a student picking a college happens within the first 5 minutes of visiting a campus. It's their first impression. And back then, Ole Miss didn't have such a pretty campus. So they realized we have an issue. They then went to their front line, the people that beautify the campus, the landscape maintenance team. And they said, we need a more attractive campus. What do we need to do? Well, interesting. And this happens sometimes with the business hierarchy that needs get interlinked. And the maintenance team said, well, we want to do beautification projects. We don't have enough time. You know, their campus is 1,000+ acres. That's a lot of acreage to maintain. And they only have a crew of a certain size. And so Ole Miss was forced upon this decision. Do we double or triple our team, or do we enable our team to find alternative solutions? Well, it wasn't in their budget to triple the maintenance team. So the team had to figure it out. And one thing I noticed is the biggest time-consuming element. Now, this is an efficiency thing, an order level. One of the challenges at the order level was how long it took to mow or maintain the properties. They had when they were mowing, the fastest way to mow a property is to go in a straight line. But when they were coming upon trees, they had to navigate around the low-hanging limbs. When they got to a mulch pattern that was in a square, they had to kind of jostle around that pattern. When a garbage can was in the grass, they had to kind of go around it and get out with a weed whacker. So the team said, if we want to increase efficiency here, cut the limbs off the tree so we can go right under them, 10 feet high. which by the way is a great way to beautify trees. They raised the limbs. They said, change the square patterns and angular patterns of mulch always to an oval so we can do sweeping motions right around it and continue on. They made decisions to increase efficiency, which allowed them now to maintain the property in half the time, freeing up the other half of their time to work on beautification of the campus. Well, fast forward only a mere few years, Ole Miss became the most beautiful campus. It has a reputation for this, the most beautiful campus in the SEC conference, perhaps in all of the nation, one of the top rated campuses on attraction, on its beauty. And you won't be surprised, they had an exponential increase in their prospects, their applications. So that's an example where leadership identified, we have a problem. But instead of just saying, you know, we got to fix the way this place looks, they looked at the hierarchy and said, this is a sales issue. Where do prospects first enter the campus? That was our first beautification project, was near the administrative buildings where students would come in, the student center and so forth. They spoke with the front line, the people that are closest to the problem, and got their direction. And in this case, they killed two birds with one stone. They brought efficiency to the organization at the order level while addressing a sales issue. So that's an example of how this business hierarchy of need is a great way to diagnose and pinpoint what we need to work on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is awesome. And boy, way back in the day, we interviewed Jeff McManus, who leads up that team.
Oh, yeah. And Jeff was the leader of that team. Yes.
And so, yeah, you shared some more elements to the story. So that was fun. Well, so then I imagine then in a business or an organization, you're to come up with dozens or hundreds of problems or opportunities, as depending on your frame of reference, that you'd notice that could benefit from some attention.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking about the hierarchy of needs, how do you determine who wins? I mean, do the sales issues always win because they're at the base of the needs, or how do we kind of navigate and triage that?
Great question. As opportunities or challenges present themselves, you always address the base level first, because if the base is compromised, the entire foundation, the structure is. I said I'd reference that coffee shop, so let me explain how they did this. This coffee shop was growing, and multiple team members, they built a second location. They then opened a roastery facility where they're preparing coffee. And what they noticed is they've been in business for 13 years, a rapidly growing coffee company. It's called Cottonwood Coffee, by the way, in South Dakota. And the leader of that organization, his name is Jacob, noticed that when they looked at the business hierarchy of needs, that they had some sales issues in prospect attraction and so forth, but also said, we've been in business for 13 years. We're one of the most established providers in this area. We're beyond sales issues. We're really about impact and legacy of being of service to our community. And he tried to continue to focus there, but the business kept on kind of getting stalled in its growth. Well, finally, he said, you know what? Maybe it is a sales issue. And they went back to the community they were serving and how they were serving them. And by getting back to the base, all of a sudden that opened up sales and it allowed them to build up the rest of the structure. You know, picture this like building a actual structure, a building, and it has five levels. If you want to build a tall building with a big top, you're going to have a huge impact. You can't have a little needle point structure below it. It'll collapse on that. It won't be strong enough. It's like a pyramid. You must have a foundation that's adequate and substantial to support the level above it. And that level must be adequate to support the next. If at any time we want to grow up stronger at a higher level, we need to make sure the foundation is appropriate to support it. So this is not a ladder. You don't just climb up and aspire to be the top. You cycle through, constantly strengthening the base and the levels, the lower levels to support the higher levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm hearing that, I guess I'm just imagining a organization in which it's sort of like, okay, we got 60 problems/opportunities, you know, they are sprinkled across all of these dimensions.
Yeah.
And some of them fall into sales. So I think it's a good argument that you got to handle that to really kind of flourish and have that foundation. I guess I'm thinking in a way, you know, everything could always be better. So how do you go about maybe doing the data collection or the benchmarking to say, oh, I thought our sales were fine. Oh, but maybe they're not. I thought our profits were fine. Oh, but maybe they're not. Because I think they could always be better.
Oh, yeah. Everything can always be better. Mm-hmm. But they can only be better in relation. So the simple question, and you know, there is no specific number I can share, but what I can say is that, is the base adequate to support enough and substantial elements of the next level? Is sales strong enough to support our target in goal and profit? And a lot of this is just communication. I'm surprised how many divisional leaders, we have some public companies that have implemented the business hierarchy of needs, and these divisions are taking on without consideration of the overall business hierarchy of needs. So there's a greater business hierarchy, and then within it, each division becomes its own little hierarchy. Mm-hmm. So we got to work in relation to that. So what's the major corporate goal and need specifically? Then we look back and we say, in our division or in our field of responsibility, do I have adequate sales to support the profit expectation for me? And if so, then I actually have a profit issue. If profit isn't there, it's not a sales issue. You know, sadly, I see businesses go, you know, we just need to sell more. We're going to sell our way out of this. It's the most common thing I see from business leaders. And it's one of the biggest mistakes because sales does not translate to profit. I see businesses sell unprofitable items. And while their sales dollars go up, the profit margins are getting thinner and thinner. And the business is actually struggling more. So it's all in relation. We need clarity from the next one, who we're connected to, the next leader that we're working with. And what are the profit expectations to drive your needs? What are the sales expectations? What degree of efficiency? How many resources can we use to get this stuff done? And what are the turnaround times? Those are questions we have to have clarity on. And that way, we're speaking up the chain all the way to the leader or leaders of our organization to understand the needs, and they drive them back down. So it works in relation, and it works through communication.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then it sounds like there's expectation setting and communicating, you know, that's going forward.
Oh, yeah, of course, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny. I say, of course, and yet it doesn't happen. I'm shocked at how many businesses have arbitrary goals.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at is the arbitrariness. Like, how do we unarbitrary them and make them based on something real?
Yeah, yeah. And the simple question is why? And how does this serve us? You know, I worked for a Fortune 500 after I got acquired, and I was blown away by the lack of communication, at least around goal setting. There's a lot of communication around red tape, but there was not a lot of communication around goal setting. And so when I was told, hey, Mike, your department has to do X, I said, why? And they're like, because that's what we told you. I'm like, but what's the reasoning behind it? And that started an understanding of the importance of how it serves the company in a greater whole. Now I had context. It actually empowered me in that division. I only worked there for a year before I went back out to start my own business. But then it gave me context of why I need to achieve what I need to achieve. That's a very empowering thing. So get the context.
I love that so much because when you asked why, they're like,
what?
I don't, what? It's like, no one's ever really asked me that before, Mike. I just kind of accustomed to telling people what they need to do. And then they try to do it.
Yeah, it was shocking. And part of it too, I think, was just history. Well, that's what we always do. We just pick 10% higher. Well, why not pick 50% higher? Well, because we never do that. So that context, you know, and it isn't to be challenging in the confrontational sense. It's to be challenging in seeking clarity. And just because in that case, the leader of our department wasn't telling me that, didn't mean it was right to ignore that, that I had a responsibility to step up and ask, which made us both better leaders, I think, as a result.
Okay, that's cool. Well, so then let's zoom in to a professional who's somewhere in the middle of things, and they've been communicated a target. We need to reduce the manufacturing waste rate by 10%, the conversion rate of clients needs to be increased by 10%, like something.
Yeah.
And maybe you have a good conversation about, well, why? Oh, okay, I see how that makes sense and interrelates and fits with the other dimensions. How do you go about making that happen in terms of determining what to fix next within a narrower scope of your responsibilities?
Yeah, so this is where we present the hierarchy of needs. So you talked about conversion, you talked about manufacturing, you know, defect or efficiency.
Yeah, so two separate kinds of responsibilities.
Two separate things. One was a order level, one was a sales level. So what we do is we go back to our department leads and say, listen, I'm being given direction in this hierarchy and there's two different demands. The default is we always go to the base, but do we understand, is that a necessity? Because this could be, the leader could be giving you arbitrary goals. You know, do we have adequate sales to first drive that efficiency and will it have greater impact on our business? Or do we need the sales in place first in order to make the investment in building the efficiency? So we have to figure out the sequence.
Right. Like you might be too small to make investing in the super cool technology or robot.
Oh my God. I see companies that have so much potential efficiency, but so low flow, it becomes actually less efficient. I worked with a major playset manufacturer, you know, one of the bigger ones. They're over $100 million in revenue. And what was so fascinating is they had this massive equipment. And the complexity in setting it up was so time consuming. Now they had the demand. Once that system was set, it was just, you know, ring out process to process. So the gain was in more volume. But if they had just put one playset through that, the 16 hours of setting up, someone could have hand painted three playsets on their own. Mm-hmm. It'd be faster to actually do hand painting. So this stuff always works in relation.
Yeah, no, that's great perspective there. Okay, well then I'd love to hear in terms of sort of what's the alternative, like if we're not thinking in this way, I guess it's arbitrary and you're not motivated or inspired because you're not connected to the why, you could misallocate your resources and attention on things that don't really matter. Could you sort of share with us, what does life look like when you're doing this versus not doing this? And what are some of the best and worst practices to making sure you're doing this well?
So with the business hierarchy of needs and the fixes next process, the first thing we always talk about is what's called lifestyle congruence. It is the base of motivation. How does this serve you? If you do something, how does it serve you? And that's just how all humanity is wired. So there's more than just the organizational needs. It's how does the organizational needs translate to the service of you? Does it give you an opportunity to climb the corporate ladder? Does it give you actually more time, more free time? Or what objectives are you serving on your own? So there's that interpersonal relationship. Without the hierarchy of needs, without the understanding, I see business professionals get into very much an action-reaction mode, meaning there's some trigger, a request, a demand, that incessant stream of email coming in, and we just put out fire after fire after fire. Something comes in, we react to it, but there's no contemplation. So the business hierarchy of need, the differentiator is an action, a trigger event happens, but now there's contemplation between the action and reaction. There's an intentional pregnant pause to say, how is this of service to the organization? How is this congruent with what I'm trying to set as my own objectives? And now we move much more deliberately. The business hierarchy of needs helps us focus on the next impactful thing to do. Without it, people focus on the next apparent thing. And there's a constant stream of apparent issues. And so it becomes a randomization. Uh-huh. Those divisions, those leaders often make a few steps forward and there's a few steps back and a few steps forward. The ones who are deliberately identifying the most impactful thing and act on it are much more effective in moving forward consistently and growing to their objectives.
All right on. Well, can you walk us through maybe a couple more examples of, you know, there's someone and they've got a set of responsibilities for a division and then they are doing some real smart prioritization of fixing the right thing next.
Yeah, so I was working with a corporation, which I want to leave nameless, but since the COVID incident, they've lost a massive volume of customers. Actually, they've experienced more, it's more massive churn. They're losing customers, but they're gaining. And I may or may not sit on the board of this company, so maybe I just gave it away there. But I sit on the board of this company, and we had a impromptu discussion. The company was working on the impact level. Now, which by the way means you don't ignore sales. They have sustainable sales and it continues to grow on its own. But where the concentrated effort needed to be was on impact of being greater and greater service. Well, all of a sudden, with this shift and this drop in clients, because these clients went out of business, they're a B2B business, and these other clients coming in, now all attention went to sales. The leadership team redirected their focus and said, how do we cater to this new market? How do we service customers that are leaving us almost at a whim because of fear? How do we protect them and retain a core function? They provide a very necessary function for these businesses. Without them, you may go out of business. You need this function. And how do we readdress it? So very quickly on the dime, they saw an issue present itself. Just when this case broke, they noticed the metrics, the empirical data of a drop of customers, and all of leadership looked there and said, we will achieve legacy and impact. We have been satisfying that. But for now, we can't stop building that third and fourth floor of the building. We got to get back in the basement because we have a crack in the foundation and leadership went down there. They responded very rapidly as a result. And the story will reveal itself over the next months and perhaps a year or two ahead. But their quick response and deliberate response has put a tourniquet on potential massive loss if they just said, you know what, we're going to just continue to focus at this level and not redirect their attention. And I think they would have been made aware of it because they always look at the business hierarchy of needs and are asking, where do we need our attention now? They responded quicker than if they weren't considering that hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love it if you could give us, are there any sort of shortcuts or really kind of quick questions or indicators or acid tests that might make you say, aha, I have a hunch that I need to focus my energies over here?
Yes. Well, so a quick indicator is if you're taking on debt, if you have an increasing demand on budgets and you don't have increasing sales. So if debt's increasing in excess of sales and profit, that's a massive indicator that we actually have a profit issue. There's a margin issue in the organization. One of the shortcut techniques that I love, I see companies implementing right now, is in repositioning. If people are not buying an offering, to try to sell harder, particularly with the macroeconomics that's occurring now, is usually not a right response. We're using a technique we call one step prior. And here's what it is. You look at your final offering. Let's use a restaurant because probably everyone on this call has had experiences with a restaurant. When you go to a restaurant and you sit down, they deliver food to your table. That's the end product. But if we look one step prior to that, well, what are they doing? They're carrying the food to you, they're delivering it. Well, that's an offering in itself, the delivery of food. And some restaurants are responding that way. What happens one step prior to that? Well, there's a preparation of food. You know, a restaurant could make that an offering, make it a new product by recording the 10 most popular recipes and deliver that as a new product offering. What happens one step prior to that? Well, there's the procurement of raw materials, the inventory, the meats and vegetables. Maybe they can sell that. So I see organizations reconsidering if there's a stop in sales or you see some empirical data with a drop off. One option too is reconsider the packaging in the first place. And that's a real simple shortcut to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Well, tell me, Mike, anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
Yeah. So the last thing I just want to mention is, well, there's a resource for you if I can share that. And there's a process. So I'll do the process first. It's called OMEN, O-M-E-N, stands for Objective, Measurement, Evaluation, Frequency, and Nurture. Once we identify what to work on, you can use OMEN as a simple structure to measure and ensure the progress, the results you want. Then there's a resource that I'm encouraging people to use because it's totally free and it's a quick evaluation for your division, your business. It's at fixthisnext.com. So if you go to fixthisnext.com, you click on free evaluation, you can take a 5-minute, it's a series of questions to really pinpoint what to work on next. And there's no download, it just the results appear on the screen and you can take action on it. So it's a good compass or guidance tool.
Awesome, thank you. Well, now could you share a favorite quote so that you find inspiring?
Oh, I have it above my desk at home, and I'm going to bring a big one and put it in our hallway here at our office. Be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. In my final assessment of business and a life, the most successful people are the ones who are most joyous, and it's the ones who truly are simply themselves and allow the business to be a platform to be more of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And have it a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
Right now, I'm studying quantum physics, mm-hmm. and I'm studying this concept of basically time relativity, but basically that we're in a box universe. Actually, that's not even the right term, but that all time has happened simultaneously. So the past, the present, and the future has already all occurred. It's all available. It's time slicing, effectively, and it's a mind wrap. I've been studying it intensely and really trying to wrap my head around it. And it's just changing my perspective of life itself.
Wow. Could you point us to a book or resource to get into that?
Yeah, well, Stephen Hawking has some good research around that. Simple Answers to Big Questions is a good starting point. Mm-hmm. And then the BBC has some really great basic teachings in some of those ethereal concepts.
Mm-hmm. And how about a favorite book in general?
Well, I say a current one. It's appealing to me. It's called 100 Days of Rejection by Jia Jiang, I think is his last name. And it's just this guy who studied the power of intentionally being rejected. It's really a cool concept.
Mm-hmm. And how about a favorite tool, something you use to be awesome at your job?
We use a tool called Voxer here at our office for rapid communication. It's a really cool way to batch communication and keep a record of communication. I think particularly in the virtualization of business that's really being enforced now, you have to, that we need a new way to have still a semi-tactile experience and engage. And this is superseded voicemail or email. It's just a better form of communication for us called Voxer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my friend Lisa, who's also on the podcast, Lisa Cummings, loves Voxer. And how about a favorite habit? Something that helps you be awesome.
Well, every morning I exercise. And after that, I do a singing bowl. It's a bowl that you hit and you can rub a stick on it and it rings. And I use that for meditation or prayer time. And it's just a great way for me to put thoughts out into our world and universe, and a great way to sense relief too.
So you move the bowl and do you say anything or just think or?
No, so a singing bowl, it's like a bowl, like you would, a cereal bowl made out of metal. You tap a stick on it and it makes a chime sound.
I think I've seen that, yeah.
And then as you move the stick around, the vibrations continue. So the chime actually gets louder and louder and you can make it softer and there's ways to change directions on the chime. And the visualization I use is it puts out sound waves or vibrations into the world. And so as I have my thoughts, I put thoughts out for the goodness of humanity, of people, health, I can see it visually going out. So it's kind of a cool visualization tool and an audio tool.
Mm-hmm. And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate with folks and they quote it back to you often?
You know what? One thing that's been really powerful is people speak the truth through their wallets, not their words. And I've used that as an asset is measure people by their action, particularly when we're in a business. Are they willing to spend it or not? Because if they're saying we support this, we love it, and they don't spend, they don't support it, they don't love it.
I've lived that a few times.
Yeah.
If folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
So you can go to fixthisnext.com to do that evaluation. And if you want to learn more about my research of business and business operations, you can go to mikemikalowicz.com. But here's the deal, Pete. No one can spell Mikalowicz, so I have a shortcut. It's Mike Motorbike, as in the motorcycle. It was my nickname in high school, so I still own it. So mikemotorbike.com. And if you go there, all my research is available for free on blogs and podcasts. I also have my books there. I used to write for the Wall Street Journal, and it's all for free at mikemotorbike.com.
Mm-hmm. And you have a final challenge or call to action for folks looking to be awesome at their jobs?
Yeah, listen, this is the time to step up. And the world kind of got punched all business leaders in the face right now and is also asking you to turn up the heat because we need the economy to keep going. So the call to action is really a call to arms. It's time for us as business professionals to step up, step forward, and start kicking some ass.
All right. Mike, thank you. This has been a lot of fun. I wish you all kinds of luck as you're fixing things next.
Exactly. Thank you.
I love so much of what Mike had to say. And I'm going to zero in a couple of things. One was when you said the most successful people are the ones who are most joyous, who truly are simply themselves. And I really do see that. It's like we heard earlier about folks who are primal or tapping into primitive drive and they're all a little bit nuts. And here, I think that really bears out. Like folks are just loving, doing their thing, dorking out, finding the joy, being themselves, and great things are flowing from that. And the other one was when his boss gave him the goal, the objective, and he asked why. I love that so much because it's just like surprising to everybody. Like, what? No one's ever really asked me that. But when you ask the why, you get the context, which gives you some more motivation. It gives you a broader understanding and perspective of the strategic interdependencies of your organization and what you're after and how your stuff fits into the broader stuff and what you might need to do as a result to make that work. I love it. This is the goal. Why? Awesome stuff. Again, the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we've referenced are at awesomeatyourjob.com/app566. If you haven't already, I encourage you to push subscribe. You'll catch our next guest, Kristen Neff. She is sharing how to be and why to be more self-compassionate. If you've been beating yourself up at your lack of productivity and distractedness amongst this pandemic situation, well, I think she may have just the antidote for that. I hope to catch you there. And peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.